Hello and welcome to Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. I'm Dante Kirby, reporter with Technically, and in this series, we'll be exploring the theme of the new normal and discussing some of the lessons we've learned during 2020. And today, my guest is Samantha Musgrave, interim director of Project Waves, a company that provides free and high-speed home internet to more than 300 households in Baltimore. So I guess just to start off, tell me about how has the transition been to interim director?
Yeah, it's first and foremost, like, thanks for taking this time to speak with me. It's a great, this is a really awesome series. And I think I'm really excited to watch what folks have to say. But the transition has been really intense and also really rewarding. I think Waves has always been pretty well positioned to manage these kinds of changes just because of the collaborative nature and the way that we work, like the way that we work with communities and our partners. I think that the transition was quick. Like, obviously I needed a few weeks to find my footing, but I've been really, really lucky to receive like great advice and guidance and support from my team and from like our partners who are invested in this work.
So, and what's new with Project Wave since we last spoke?
Great question. So we last spoke, I think, in May. And since then, we've really made progress. We're serving more than 370 households and almost 1,000 individuals on the network so far. And I think one of the most exciting things that we're actually ready to talk about at this point is we connected an entire apartment building over in Johnston Square to our network. So in partnership with Rebuild Metro and LightCloud, who's like our friend in fiber, we ran fiber to that apartment building and connected all 217 units there to 200 megabit per second symmetrical service. And we also placed our 13th sector antenna on the roof of that building, which means about 80% of households in like the broader Johnston Square community can potentially receive Wave service. So we've connected a few homes out there. We've gotten a lot, like we've really gotten to know the Johnston Square community as a whole. They're so tight knit. It's really inspirational to be working out there. So we're really excited about that.
And can you talk a little bit about like how Project Wave works and sort of like?
Totally. So basically what we do is we provide wireless internet service to communities across Baltimore who are specifically impacted by the digital divide. So we use what are called sector antennas. These are antennas that broadcast internet signal. We essentially like blanket communities with these antennas, and then we install like a household receiver. It looks a lot like a DirecTV satellite dish, like on the roof of a building or out on a windowsill, often on a porch, to establish line of sight to that sector antenna that's broadcasting signal. And that receiver antenna is then wired to a router that is in the home of households, and we're providing internet service to a bunch of people that way. So about 1,000 individuals and 370 households are currently served.
And I guess going back to 2019, I guess can you describe a little bit of the discourse on the digital divide and the public will to bridge that gap before the pandemic versus where we are now in 2021?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And it's one that I think we could spend hours on, but 2019 seems kind of like a lifetime ago in a lot of ways. I have a lot of thoughts on like the discourse and kind of the path that we've taken to get where we are now. But I think mostly back in 2019, like the public response to the digital divide was really in large part a response to actions taken like on the federal level, the Trump FCC repealing net neutrality, a general failure and refusal to redefine or increase the definition of like high-speed broadband. And at that time, like digital equity and inclusion spaces really began to include organizations and individuals from like the broad spectrum of life, not just like the tech sector. So it seems like back then there was this like light bulb moment and like coalition building hit a new level. That's around the same time that we saw the BDEC come together, the Baltimore Digital Equity Coalition. But now it seems like 2020 rolled around, right? And like the COVID-19 pandemic really exacerbated some of these like super deeply entrenched and like inexcusable ways that the digital divide has really impacted Baltimore specifically. Like once schools and daycares, like primary care physicians, offices, and like workspaces closed back then, the divide was like just super stark. And a lot of digital inclusion spaces and equity spaces had always been like really aware of the ways that like the divide mirrored racial and socioeconomic lines. But suddenly the fact that like 40% of households in Baltimore didn't have internet service like became not just a complication. It was like a complete barrier to like stability and success. And it was like really clear. Baltimore City Schools shared back in the spring of 2020 that 24,000 students in their system lacked internet service or access to like learning appropriate devices. And that meant like 1/3 of city school students couldn't receive like a constitutionally mandated like public education. And it was really a crisis. So I think like we kind of went through 2019, we were all kind of coming to tables, right? Coming into these spaces. And then 2020 hit and there were a lot of like stopgap measures put into place that really aren't intended to be long-term, right? I think that when we look at things like school systems across the US, not just here in Baltimore, but all over the country, paying for internet service from like incumbent providers, those things are never intended to be permanent, right? If we are spending millions of dollars paying traditional ISPs to like bridge this gap, we're also like asking those providers who were the cause often, the root of this problem, to like come up with solutions. And those aren't always at the best interest of the people who need them. But it's definitely like today, it seems like the muddy waters is clearing up a little bit and some of the foundations for long-term change are really coming together. So we know nothing happens overnight, but I'm really encouraged by like Mayor Scott's acknowledgement of these problems, both while he was campaigning and since he's taken office, his inclusion of, you know, appointment of Jason Hardebeck to his office, the Office of Broadband and Digital Inclusion, has really been wonderful. And to have that be part of his first 100-day plan, that was wonderful. And it gives people like a place to really bring creative solutions and you know, really to like clearly define the struggles that they're facing. It gives them a space in city government. I think that like, the other thing to say is that like, there's been a lot of advocacy on behalf of elected officials. Zeke Cohen's support of youth and community-led initiatives have been really powerful. I always like to call out the advocacy on behalf of like the SOMO students over at City College. They've been really killing it and have really done an incredible job in like, forcing Comcast to be better at what they do. So like we saw the opening of Comcast hotspots during the pandemic. We saw the extension of Internet Essentials offers kind of increase from SOMO's advocacy. And we also saw them double the speed of Internet Essentials, which is really huge. We've also seen a lot of big changes like on the state side, the advocacy and like really progress that Delegate Brooke Learman has been able to kind of foster and lead with the passage of Senate Bill 66 and the creation of the Maryland Office of Broadband and Digital Inclusion has been really wonderful to see. And we're really excited to see like on the federal level, the investment, like economic investment into things like infrastructure, the American Rescue Plan Act, really allowing municipalities like Baltimore to invest the dollars needed into change. So that's been a really big piece of it. I think it's just the narrative has really continued in the right direction despite everything that's happened. So it's encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I guess as the world starts to open back up and like, and it feels like less of a necessity to have internet access as people start to like return to like in-person jobs and like offices to a certain degree, and like with the hybrid working and like hybrid school schedules, like I guess what's one way you don't want the digital equity conversation to backslide?
Yeah, great question. I think about this a lot, and I think that there's like real risk of this conversation backsliding. I think the biggest thing is that like in moments of disaster, like the one we've just been experiencing for the past year and a half, and frankly, like we really don't know where we're gonna be in the fall. We know cases are, like COVID cases are increasing, vaccination rates are falling, they've really stagnated. It's easy for us to like look toward major incumbents for like long-term answers to really entrenched problems like the digital divide. And when we do that, we're really allowing major causes of these problems to like define the solutions. So we saw that like, you know, we've seen that already occur in bringing Comcast into these like, you know, stopgap solutions and measures. I'm really hopeful that as we continue this conversation toward like municipal broadband in Baltimore, which is deeply needed, there are a lot of voices at that table, and those voices come from, you know, all walks of life, right? We need to have conversations with community internet service providers like Waves and like Rowdy Orbit, who have experience providing service from a lens of community like health and connectedness rather than like for profit. I really hope that whoever winds up guiding some of that conversation and being part of progress in those spaces in really like approaches it from a lens of like considering the internet as like a public utility, right? It's really important for us to do that. And I'm hopeful that we don't slide into kind of the default and easy way to like work with our franchise holder, right? You're a franchisee, Comcast. It's really important for us to be more intentional and think more broadly than that.
And what has 2020 and this beginning half of 2021 taught you so far?
That's a great question too. I think that it's really taught me that it's just like really critically important to like intentionally listen, right? Whether it's from the perspective of providing free internet service to historically disenfranchised and digitally redlined communities, understanding how to listen to the needs of the people that we're serving has really been a skill that's like, I'm still developing, right? I try to keep in mind that like progress like this takes time too. Waves, when I joined the Waves team, I think we had about 25 households connected, and it's taken us like every second of the past year to connect the 370 plus households that we have on the network. And so I try to remind myself that like, even though it's kind of felt like we functioned in crisis mode in a lot of ways in 2020 and the beginning of 2021, we've made a lot of progress in a relatively unstable time. So yeah, I mean, it's been wonderful to work with so many different organizations that have been at this table, right? And I credit a lot of that to the work of the Baltimore Digital Equity Coalition, giving us a space to collaborate effectively and to really push each other to like think outside the box, right? I also just think about like, I'm a parent and I look at my kids and their ability to like really remain resilient and manage a lot of the same challenges that we're all going through, whether it's like attending school online or you know, experiencing that social isolation in a big way. They've remained so resilient and flexible, and I look at them as like a real source of inspiration. You know, my own children and then the kids that we're serving. So yeah, I think that like biggest things I've learned, like be flexible, expect the unexpected, and allow yourself kind of the space to let progress happen, the space and time to let that happen.
So what's something about like Baltimore you feel makes it uniquely able to tackle these issues on the digital equity and just like internet connectivity and to a certain extent, even like pandemic readiness?
Yeah, I think, there's a ton, right? I think Baltimore is like a really, it's such a diverse city, and there's so many incredible, like large and small organizations that are here and that have always been here. I grew up in Baltimore, and I've lived kind of all over the country. And I think the thing about Baltimore that's like the best and most specific thing that really helps all of us to like address big challenges like this is that almost everyone you meet in Baltimore just like wants to be here. And that kind of like experience of feeling like a local, regardless of where what brought you to Baltimore, like it's, we all have the opportunity to be from Baltimore, and that sense of belonging like really translates into a sense of community. And I've had the privilege this year of like working with so many people like across the country, truly, who are dealing with connectivity issues. I can honestly say without reservation that everyone at the table in Baltimore feels specifically part of this conversation. And I think I credit Baltimore like as a city for like allowing anyone to be a local, right? And to kind of approach big changes and big problems together in a really effective way, so.
And I guess on that note, to sort of wrap us up, is there anything you feel we haven't talked about in regards to like Baltimore and digital equity and like Project Waves and I guess how you see the future plan out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're all like still in that one day at a time space. We are all, I think, more on edge, right? Prepared a little bit for to expect that unexpected, right? We're all kind of still in crisis mode in a big way. But I think we're all also kind of seeing that light at the end of the tunnel. I feel like this has really shifted a big, like this past year has really shifted how we're working and where we're working. And kind of like as I think about like the next year, what my life is gonna look like with kids returning to school, working, you know, for the most part remotely. I also feel like those are the kinds of things we need to include in equity conversations, right? Like if I'm able to work remotely from home and have access to the internet service that I need to do that. And my kids are able to, heaven forbid, but under certain circumstances, it might become necessary for them to attend school virtually. We need to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to do those things. And we need to start conversations from those spaces. Everyone needs to recover from this moment, and everyone needs the resources that they deserve to recover from that. And a big piece of that is ensuring that we continue to narrow this digital divide in Baltimore and that we're working with the right folks to do that, so.
Yeah, and thanks again for taking the time to talk with me, Samantha. And that's been Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. Until next time.